Bowl, football at Ground Zero, and nuclear peril today. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
KPP Concerts has a stacked lineup of all-ages concerts happening at the Broom Factory through the summer into early fall. On June 27th, check out Housewife, followed by Friday's Child at the Broom Factory on July 11th. Then on August 10th, enjoy music from hip-hop artist Matt Mack, followed later by The Dirty Nil on September 19th. Then on September 26th, it's Petite Belle Ivaux and neo-grunge icons The Bridge City Sinners coming to town on September 27th. And then Yukon Blonde gets us into the fall spirit on September 28th. All shows are all ages at the Broom Factory and co-presented by CFRC 101.9 FM. For a complete list of shows and ticket information, visit kppconcerts.com.
This episode of the Kingston Live podcast is brought to you by Grand On Stage. Get the most out of the Kingston Grand Theater experience with access to pre-sale tickets, the best prices, and the best seats. Tickets for individual performances and subscriptions for the Grand On Stage season are on sale now at kingstongrand.ca.
In 2025, the Canadian music and media landscape is, in general, clearly defined. Streaming holds a significant market share, and radio plays its role from region to region. Most commercial radio stations are owned by major corporations like Rogers, Bell, and Corus. And in that paradigm, grassroots organizations need to get creative to find their footing. This is Kingston Live, and today we're talking volunteer-run, independent community radio with a station that has been championing local music for nearly two decades.
This is Island Radio, 101.3 FM. Please remember, we got a few more days left in our fund drive, so head on over to cjai.ca.
Amherst Island's 101.3 FM Island Radio has been broadcasting out of an actual barn on the island since 2006, and in that time has garnered a well-earned reputation as a committed and engaged outlet for the community. Entirely volunteer-operated and 100% nonprofit, 101.3 combines the power and reach of radio with an eclectic array of programming you won't find on any corporate station. It's the kind of spot where you'll hear emerging artists playing studio sessions alongside local news and shows hosted by people in the area. It's raw, it's real, and it's essential in a media landscape dominated by corporations. Today we sit down with Island Radio station manager Eric Tremblay to talk about the impact of volunteering and empowering the community.
All right. Should we jump into it?
Take her away.
Eric Tremblay, welcome to the Kingston Live podcast.
No, thanks, Rob. Thanks very much. When you called me and said you wanted to do this, I was like, what? This is crazy. I've heard this podcast so many times, and now I'm actually going
to
be on it.
You were sort of part of our origin story to a degree, and I can't believe it's taken this long to get you on.
It's been a long time coming, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, shout out to Nathan Graham as well. He's behind the glass on this one, not John. John is in front of me.
I get to be talking to people. I get to be social this time. It's nice.
Yes. Thank you, Nathan, yes.
So I want to say, Amherst Island Radio, CJ, 101.3 FM. It's a community radio station. What's the difference between a community radio station and a commercial radio station? I'm asking because I'd bet that most or many of our listeners probably don't know or think about it when they're channel surfing the radio dial.
So in Canada here, the way it basically works is there is two major kinds of radio stations. Commercial radio station, as you can think about it, it's there to generate profits, money for the owner. Sometimes it could be a private company that's owning that radio station. Other times it could be a public company that's owning that radio station. But of course, they're going to operate in a kind of a revenue generation type of model. But a community radio station is pretty different. Most community radio stations in Canada are either registered charities or they're nonprofit corporations, and they're largely volunteer run. And the mandate of these particular organizations is to invite the community into the radio station, to be part of the radio station. And really, that's why the programming on community radio stations often reflects the needs, desires, and wants of the given community population. It's pretty diverse here in a community radio station, and it's actually pretty exciting too, because is we let untrained people talk on microphones.
I'm one of them right now.
Well, that's the other thing. It's not just the broader community, but you have a community here. You have all these people, these volunteers that get involved.
Oh, yeah. And we have jokes around here at the radio station because I've been here 14 years with this one. And the jokes are sometimes we're ships passing in the night because when we go to parties, we like to make little name tags to say, like, you know, I'm Friday, 7 to 9 p.m. because that's how we identify with each other, right? It's like, oh, I have that slot. And I never bump into that guy because I'm a Monday guy and et cetera, et cetera. So it is a community right in here that have to work together as a set of volunteers. But sometimes we work together in a way that's interesting because I might not meet you face-to-face for months and months and months, and all of a sudden we have a project and we need to work together, so here we go.
In 2026, the station, I think, is going to be celebrating 20 years, am I right?
Yes.
And it started in a barn on a little Amherst Island just across the water here. We're sitting in a beautiful modern facility right now. You've come a long way. Give us the backstory briefly.
Oh, yeah, you're right. So this is before my time. But basically, a bunch of crazy islanders decided that, you know what, it's very possible. I think we can go ahead and make a radio station on this island, right? And really, one of the creative forces back then was Peter Truman. So he was an ex-anchor with Global Television, and he retired, his first phase of his retirement, by moving to Amherst Island. And he had all these skills, as you can imagine, working in a very top-notch pro job for so many years. And he said, you know, we could do this. All we need is that island ingenuity, because that's the thing about the island. They don't care. They just do things, okay? Because, you know, that farmer can do this, and that guy can wire an electrical circuit, and you snap your fingers, stuff is done. And that's exactly what they did. They just turned around and they converted an old milk house. The year before it was a radio station, there was actually cows there, actually milk tanks. It was a working farm. And they had a vacancy and they just decided, hey, what are we going to do with this place? Let's turn it into a community hub. And it's interesting because you mentioned 20 years. We just had our 19th anniversary. And one of the original folks from those days, Jim Gould, came to visit us. And I asked him a question on the mic and I said, how is it like coordinating the volunteers in the very, very early days when you just lit up that barn? He says it was so easy. I think there were 9 of us. So it's been a lot of change now from a 9-person organization trying to fill a schedule 24 hours a day to over 60 people here that are working in the modern incarnation of this place.
We were talking just before we started recording here, and you mentioned the Amherst Island Radio mission. Is there actually a formal mission? Like, and has the mission changed, or was it sort of conceived and put into motion back then, all those, you know, 20 years ago? Because it seems like there's something still driving the organization forward.
And I was going to ask, was it originally founded to serve the people on the island?
Yes. Okay. So that's exactly right. So in the beginning, they had what's called a 5-watt developmental transmitter. It was on 93.7 was the frequency. And you know what? 5 watts, for anyone who's familiar with the local geography, if you were on the ferry dock, you could hear the radio station. But as soon as you went to Amherst River Bath, it was over. Like, you couldn't get five watts. In that first year, there's a lot of stories, again, before my time, but a lot of stories where people used to just drive and park on the dock and listen because they just thought it was crazy that there was a radio station over there operating like 5 watts. You know, sort of radio-free Caroline kind of a situation. It's floating in the lake, right? But after doing that for 1 year, they just decided, okay, well, it's kind of cool. And what we need to do is grow it a little bit. So they went and applied. And this is federally regulated, right? So there's process after process after process. And then they turned it into a 250-watt radio station. And this all of a sudden unlocked the entire island because even at 5 watts, there was places on Amherst Island that couldn't get it. And the mandate that was written to the CRTC in the very original day was, it's an island radio station. It's for islanders only. This was the way it was going to be. The accidental side effect that happened, though, when they opened up to 250 watts, is all of a sudden, hey, these crazy mainland people can all of a sudden hear what's going on in that barn. Unintended, right? Because we're all doing island-based programming, and all of a sudden people on the mainland are like, hey, we like this island-based programming. And then, you know, the internet did things as well, because all of a sudden people could listen everywhere. And then it just grew, John, just like crazy, to the point where in 2021, we got an approval, formal approval from the CRTC to be for the entire municipality of Loyalist Township. So we had to erect a massive tower. We spent $200,000. We erected a giant tower, and now we're 4,800 watts. And I talked about accidental side effects. Well, in the early days, we now have an accidental side effect. Now, with this more power, is we get all of Kingston. We get all of Napanee. We go up into Stone Mills and Tamworth. And now the community engagement is so broad that it kind of scares us once in a while.
And what do you mean by that?
It's just crazy stories. Like people say, oh, yeah, I've been listening to you guys for years. You know, ever since you guys made that change, and I can get you all of a sudden and all this. And people will be living in the weirdest places, you know, like Shannonville listening to us and stuff like that. People that we don't immediately think is our target market when we're talking, right? But they're like, oh, yeah, I have your radio in my kitchen all the time. It's the station that we listen to in the kitchen or in the garage. We get a lot of garage radio, right? And the number one reason why they like to listen, because I was formerly the president of this organization for 10 years. Now I'm the station manager. You know, my job is to find out, like, why? What's the secret sauce? Why do people like this? Pretty much the number one thing is they just don't know what the hell we're doing, and they don't know what's going to happen next. And I tell them, well, okay, neither do we. So we're going.
Well, there's
good.
A predictability to commercial radio where, you know, you're turning on, you're probably tuning in because you know what's going to happen. You can predict what's going to, you know. I want to touch on that because community radio stations are known for the variety of content and formats. You're not just playing one type of music, for example. But for those unfamiliar with the radio station, tell us a little bit about the variety of programming on Amherst Island Radio.
So we have a series of workflows that we use for the programming. You know, the most popular one is to have an actual live human being sitting behind a microphone. We have two studios, like we talked about, the one that's in the barn. It's still fully active. We call that our world headquarters. But now, just in 2025, we launched this media hub in Bath. Mm-hmm. So the broadcaster has free choice, and it can be different from each week. Like, let's say you're the Monday morning guy. Like, you can be Monday morning one week on the island and Monday morning the next week here. And the idea is everyone who sits in the chair has 100% creative control. So Rob, if you love death metal, guess what your show is about, Rob? Your show is about death metal. And you know, one of my roles has been to recruit volunteers over the years. And I get that question a lot from people who want to help. And they say, what kind of show should I do that your listeners are going to like? And I say, no, that's the wrong question. The right question is, what kind of music do you like? And that's what your show is going to be about. Because really, it comes down to passion. Mm-hmm. If that volunteer can exude passion into that microphone, it doesn't matter what kind of music they're listening to. Someone is going to be turned on by that, is going to listen to that, and is going to see the difference, perhaps, between other types of media and what you get at community radio. Because it might not be polished, but it's full of passion.
Yeah, I've listened to radio a lot of times for the music and the entertainment, but a lot of times I'm listening for news and to stay up to date and things like that. And the state of news on radio, at least commercial radio these days, leaves a lot to be desired, especially from a local perspective. You're not just music in terms of format. You're also offer news now recently. Tell us a little bit.
Oh, yeah. And a lot of this is due to the volunteers that paved the way over the last 5 or 6 years. But right now we have a full news director. So Ted Evans is our full news director. He's also a musician in town. Great guy. We have grant funded him through the local journalism initiative for 2 years now to write original news. And what we also have done in the
You would be one of the few radio stations around covering local stuff in the way that you and Ted are doing.
Correct. That's very correct. We try not to brag, but it's very accurate to say that we're the local news leader.
Yeah.
Because nobody's talking about the stories we're talking about. Right. Nobody. And let's face it, if you want to hear about what's going on in Ottawa or Toronto or regionally and all that, you don't listen to us. That's not the news you're going to get. Yeah. But if you want to find out what happened in Odessa, yeah, you listen to us, right? Because maybe you live in the municipality, or maybe you're interested in what happened in Odessa or Amherst View or Kingston or whatever. That's the kind of stuff that we cover. We cover all the events, as you can imagine, right? So anybody in the community who's having any kind of public event, they know already. They're pretty trained. Send us a note, okay? And then that's outside the newscast. Broadcasters will just organically talk about all the events that are going on. So yeah, folks can tune in. We have 10 newscasts a week that we do, where that's a real sort of formatted situation where we're giving you a lot of news. But as far as current events are concerned, if you want to stay up to date with that, you can listen pretty much anytime. And the broadcaster is going to know to serve you up some of the cool things that are going on in Kingston, Napanee, Loyalist Township.
John, I cut you off. Sorry.
Well, I have a number of things to say. This is all great. This is all very interesting stuff. You said the word serve. Something that has come up in discussions about local media in the last several years. I had a great discussion a couple of years ago with a fellow, Paul Ferguson, who works at one of the stations in Belleville. And we were talking about this. And his point, he made a very good point. In Belleville, it's an interesting market because it's all locally owned and operated, where in Kingston, it's very corporate. That seems to be changing a bit. But his point was that you have to actually serve the community. And if you are not offering anything, you just become a playlist. But not only are you just a playlist, you're a playlist that the listener didn't get to choose. So there's very little incentive if you're not going to offer that local content and build community. There's very little incentive for people to actually listen.
Yeah, that's an insightful comment. And I think that's where you're going to see the difference between a commercial radio station and a community one. Because the sort of mindset behind the community one is, we can't do this without the community. It's not even us versus the community or us with the community. The community is us. Like, our identity is the community, right? And so that's when you think about target market. You think about people and how people can benefit from what's going on here.
Well, and I think that's really interesting too. And I think Rob and I both had this question in our minds of what is the difference between community radio and commercial radio. And I think most of us have kind of a general sense of what that means, but we've never really articulated it maybe as you have. And yeah. It's interesting how I think you've set yourself apart in that. I think earlier we said with commercial radio, it tends to be fairly predictable. And you have built yourself as the antithesis of that.
Exactly.
And have built yourself a very different audience and a very maybe specialized audience.
Yeah, and exactly. And I think another thing with commercial radio is commercial radio often really has sort of narrowed their offerings over the years to try to build efficiency in their model. For us, we've gone the other way. We've kind of opened up the model here. So we're sitting right now in a performance studio. Like, it's a decent sized performance studio in Bath here in the Media Hub. And we're recording bands. We're having live on the air performances. You know, last year we had 150 live bands in studio. So talking about inviting a community, they see themselves as part of this. They show up here. And it's not like it's pay to play over here, right? Many, many things are absolutely zero cost. How we get paid as volunteers is smiles. If someone is here and they are digging it and they're digging the vibe and that was a great session, we just go home and we feel great. We did a great job that day as part of the community. The people that come here to play are actually our equals. They're on the team that day. And our goal is to entertain people, you know, benefit the community for this. And it's just great because I've had so many stories over the years of like sort of boomerang karma, if you will, you know, where we do something really cool here and then like years can go by. And then someone says, oh, you know, that time I went out there was so great. I told these other bands. And then I'll say, oh yeah, that other band actually did come here to do a session and stuff like that. It always comes down to that serving thing. So we're going to develop podcast workflow here. We're doing the live band workflow. We're doing FM. As much media as we can do here, we will do it. And we're calling it a media hub for a reason.
Yeah. Well, and it feels that way. I love this little live room that we're in right now. It's very comfortable. It's got a good vibe. And do you do live performance to air from this room?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So
like going back to the 20s, the 30s.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. And
I guess it is the 20s, but the 1920s.
Yes. We have actually some shows that's exclusively what they do. Like one of the best ones is the Wolf's Den. Currently the hosts of the Wolf's Den are Jay and June. But what they do is every week it's a live gig. It just is a live gig. They just will book a month in advance, rolling bookings, just come on down. Everyone just hangs out here, plays music. It doesn't matter what kind of music you play. It doesn't matter how many musicians you're bringing. Just show up, okay? And they go live to air all the time. And that was built by Ellis Wolfries. He started that model on Wednesday afternoons only 1 month after this place opened in 2006. So in May 2006. And we've kept his spirit moving forward. He passed away a few years ago. And it's just fun to know that we have one slot where you can just turn it on and there's live music all the time. It doesn't matter what it is. And of course, live music will occur on all kinds of other random slots, but some of them are actually designed like that.
This episode of Kingston Live is brought to you by Grand Onstage. Grand Onstage takes you beyond the regular Kingston Grand Theater experience. It's a subscription option that gives you access to pre-sale tickets, the best prices, and the best seats. That means you can customize your own individual package starting at just 4 performances. Want to bring friends? Subscriber pricing applies to their tickets too. And if your plans change, just exchange your tickets for another performance. Tickets for individual performances and subscriptions for the Grand Onstage season are on sale now at kingstongrand.ca.
Eric, from the beginning, Amherst Island Radio has embraced and supported live and local music. You know, the station has a presence at local music festivals and live music events. You know, you've built this amazing live performance studio that into your these new facilities that we're sitting in right now. And you even operate an online station dedicated to playing purely local music. That's Radio Free Stella. Why does live and local music seem to be an essential ingredient to Amherst Island Radio's success?
That's a great question. And I think it comes down to the tie it back to this community business, right? We are all members of the community. What influences us in the community? It's the stuff that's actually close to us. It could be that local business that you like, that pizza place or that restaurant or that store, but it can also be the local music. Listen, a lot of us are in this radio station or associated with this organization because we love music. So we're going to gigs, we're going to shows and stuff like that. And tying it into showcasing local music is a huge thing. I mean, I've been a giant music fan my whole life, but I've always been slightly disappointed with commercial radio that don't play enough local music. So when I got involved here and a long time ago, and I saw that we had actually a giant local music library and that people that volunteered here actually cared about collecting that stuff and actually playing that stuff on the air, that was a huge, huge deal to me. I was really excited by this. And then, yeah, then we spun up Radio Free Stella, which is an internet-only radio station. What we do, it's basically a place where we put all the local music, right? It's just a way for us to do this. And a couple of organizations on occasion actually put it on their PA system of their store or whatnot. For example, I've heard of Habitat for Humanity, like just playing over the PA because there's no talking. So it's very easy to just put it on in the store. And it's just so cool to be walking in there and you hear Miss Emily or you hear Sons of Rick or you hear, you know, whatever local band that you want. You're just hearing Kingston stuff on the air all the time. So we play a lot of local music on the FM signal. But of course, it's really fun to have Radio Free Stella that's all local all the time.
Amherst Island Radio has always been 100% volunteer run until recently, I think. In fact, for years, you've been a volunteer board member yourself, but you were just hired as a salaried full-time station manager, which you mentioned previously. Congrats, by the way.
Yes, thank you.
But what's changed?
So I guess the idea is we're a slow-moving organization, but what we've been doing because the growth and the demand from the public is increasing the complexity around here. Because when you're running one radio station like our world headquarters on Amherst Island and it's only 500 or 600 square feet, that's a degree of organization that is reasonable. Now we have two locations and this one is three times larger. The one that we're in today in Bath is three times larger than the one that we have on the island. And now it's becoming a little bit like more moving parts, right? Nathan Graham, who's with us today behind the soundboard, he himself is a summer student that's hired on a Canadian summer jobs grant. So he needs supervision, you know. All these little things need a little bit more energy. You know, we've got Ted now, who is a salaried employee, grant funded. And as this complexity has increased here, the board of directors has thought that, okay, we need to have just a couple more hours of somebody supervising things and making sure all the volunteers are, you know, collaborating in the way that we need them to collaborate. So yeah, they just spun up a one-year gig. I have a one-year gig to be the station manager here.
You even had to apply.
Yeah.
There were other candidates.
Yes, and there were interviews, and tough interviews. And so one-year gig, and now it's, I like to think about it like the future's sort of in my hands. If I do a good job here for 1 year, and another thing, if I can grow revenue. With more revenue becomes more degrees of freedom, more choices for the board of directors to continue to grow this, because it's pretty limitless, you know, as far as what we can do here. We have the facilities now, we have all the technology now. It's just about organizing, you know, continuing to lean into all things local, showcasing local businesses and local music and then local events. And there's just so much to do around that because Kingston is a busy place, you know, and Napanee is a busy place. Loyalist Township, there's lots of stuff going on and it's tough to cover it all.
Wait, let's talk about business model for a second because Amherst Island Radio is run as a nonprofit. And although you're funded by donations, the station's not a charity. Can you tell us about the importance of donations to the station and why local businesses might be inclined to make them?
So I think that in the early days of the radio station, certainly the number one revenue stream was donations, right? Because if you think about the island can-do attitude, people thought, okay, we're going to build this thing for us and we have to help support it. So that was certainly the way. When I joined the radio station about 14 years ago, it was very clear that it was a self-funded model, you know, but we have changed over the years. Okay, it's still very important for us to have donations. We just went through a very successful fund drive where our goal was to raise $25,000, and we actually got 106% of the goal. So we exceeded the goal, which was so exciting for everyone. But then the number, as far as revenue is concerned, that number is lower now than our other revenue streams. We have two other revenue streams that actually bring more funds into the radio station to fund the complex operation. The first is business advertising. We have over 90 local businesses that choose to advertise with us. It's only $3 a day, so I'll give the shameless plug now. And we've got room for 90 more, right? When I talk to local businesses, the reason why, in their mind, it's a great investment is because it signals to the community that they support local, right? This is a growing thing, you know, through the pandemic, that was a big push to support local, and now we're seeing it again with the rumblings that are going on in the States, this idea of supporting local. Both these things feed into the sort of DNA that we have here at Amherst Island Radio, so it has grown that revenue piece for us to be serving businesses. And then the third piece that really helps us, well, apart from grants, because grants do help us, but grants are kind of transient. You just never know when you're going to get it. But the third piece for us is charity radio, bingo. We walked into this by accident. You know, it was one of these things like we're a member of the National Campus Radio Association. And I don't know, 5 years ago or whatever, they had this little program where leaders of small radio stations were going to have a coffee chat with leaders of medium or larger organizations. Just to, how's your station work? What do you do? Blah, blah, blah. Just casual. So I went to one of these meetings. And in Halliburton with Roxanne Casey at Canoe FM. And inside the conversation, he goes, oh yeah, we make money with charity radio bingo. And she went into it, and I'm like, what? How do you make money with charity radio bingo?
Yeah, if you told me that you had an idea to get people to play bingo from home by listening to the radio, I'd call you crazy.
It's crazy.
But that's exactly what you've done, and it's been wildly popular.
Yeah, it's crazy, Rob. I got to tell you.
Why do you think it's caught on?
Well, it's way beyond my expectations, okay? Like, I'll tell you that right now. We're 4 years in. In the beginning, I thought, okay, it'll be a way for us to make $5,000, maybe $10,000. But no, we're talking $60,000, $70,000 that walks into this radio station.
And the prize money is insane. How much have you given away so far?
So far, we've given away over $195,000.
Insane.
Yeah, it's crazy. We've given away over $195,000, and we've also given away $138,000 to registered charities. So people like Hospice Kingston, which our last one that we just donated $5,000, Joe's Mill, Kingston Canadian Film Festival, for example, every humane society up and down the block, women's shelters, food banks, you name it, we're basically giving stuff to folks to support local charities. That's a huge credibility engine as well, because when we show up with a check for $5,000 to, like, you know, the Kingston Youth Shelter, it's a great feeling to be able to do that, right? Talking about charity radio bingo and how it's really grown, we now have 32 locations where you can... It sounds insane. You go buy a bingo sheet, you know, in 32 different locations across the region, and you bring it home.
And you tune in.
You tune in at 6 o'clock on Thursdays, and you have a laugh. It's just crazy. Wow.
That's amazing. But besides salaries, which are kind of a new thing, what kind of things do donations and revenues go towards?
Yeah, yeah. Probably our biggest expense is equipment, as you can imagine, like trying to renew the equipment. The equipment on the island is actually very old, right? It was kind of like a very well-meaning volunteers that didn't have a lot of money, just bought stuff off of eBay. So it was already 10 years old, but when they bought it, and then now it's been sitting there for 20 years. So there's a lot of band-aiding and little fixing that has to happen
you
there.
You can still broadcast from there and do, right?
It's fully functional. We do. Yeah, we do. We absolutely do. And like I said, every broadcaster has actually free choice. So a given broadcaster could just decide, hey, today I'm going to take that beautiful ferry because it's a great day and I'm going to just do my show from there and it's fine. The technology here in Bath is a little bit more complicated. So it's easy to go from knowing how to work all the complicated stuff to knowing how to use the more simple stuff. But, you know, it's amazing. Like, we've really built a really interesting radio station here. When we're planning this expansion, we had to hire a proper broadcasting engineer to design this entire thing. We hired Eric Heidendahl, who at one point was chief technical person for TSN. And when I saw the resume and he told me that it was my job to build out all the production suites inside the Sky Dome when the Sky Dome launched, I thought, okay, well, if we can do that.
Can you work with a barn?
Yeah. Can you work with a barn? He came for one visit and he said, nobody that I would know would ever design it the way it is right here. And I said, yeah, well, that's part of the problem. But over here, it's properly designed and it's all connected. connected, right? Because we have a third location to the tower. Everything is all integrated, and it makes it so easy for a broadcaster to... We can operate the whole radio station with one person. It's really fascinating.
I get the impression that you make a lot of money, you give an awful lot of it away, and you keep a little bit to reinvest back into the station and the infrastructure, the new antenna you talked about, things like that, and then and you grow incrementally better each year.
Yeah, that's exactly it, right? Kudos has to go to a lot of the board members who have worked on this on the board for so long. They come and they go, which is a healthy thing to do, right? Someone might serve for 5 years and do something else, but they have strategically guided this organization down a very sustainable path, because we've got some naysayers, believe it or not. We've got people out there going, oh, you guys can't do that. You can't do this. You can't do that. You're going to be closed in a year if you decide to expand. But the board of directors is very confident in the sound financial nature of what they're doing, and the fact that at every step, we're building for sustainability, because we certainly want this to last for another 20 years, right? We're turning 20. We want it to last for another 20 years. One of the tricks, too, is a lot of people know this because we're not shy to talk about it on the microphone, but we need to move out of that barn at one point. Because the landlord told us, hey, one day I want to sell his property. So make a plan to slowly move out of that barn. So we're actively looking for a new location on the island to move in. And it's all about sustainability. Sure, we could find one that would cost us $5,000 a month. But we can't afford $5,000 a month, right? So how this board of directors can guide this organization in a very sustainable way is really the key.
But, you know, Kingston Live is also volunteer run. I can attest that it can be incredibly challenging to get things done when you're relying on volunteer efforts. But you've managed to mobilize a small army of highly engaged volunteers. What's the secret?
I think it comes back to what I said earlier is we rarely tell them what to do, right? We just tell them, hey, do what you think is cool. Do what you're having fun doing. And of course, one of the other things that we do is we often tell them, your job is to get people into this place. So they become your recruiters, if you will, right? And whether it's guests in the studio who are hockey players or they're gymnastics, heck, we had a whole grade 6 class from Amherst View Public School take over the radio station for 2.5 hours. So 25 kids just talked on the microphones. We didn't even talk on the microphones. I just pushed buttons for them. And it was like exciting, right? So we're ready to do pretty much anything that is cool and different and fun. And that's why volunteers think, okay, this is cool. We can actually do things. We often spend more time thinking about how we're going to do something and less time thinking about why we can't do something.
How does someone get to volunteer with Amherst Island Radio? What kind of volunteer opportunities are there?
The best way to do it is just to reach out to any volunteer. And then eventually you probably land in front of me, you know, at a coffee chat or whatnot. And then for me, I'm always, you know, I'm really good at talking to people and finding out what their passion is. So their passion could be music. Okay. We have a lot of people that come here because their passion is music. And we just find out, okay, let's get you a show. Let's do this. Let's do that. But sometimes the passion can be like, I really like computers. Okay. Oh, excellent. You know, we need a computer guys, you know, and gals, and we need people to do this and that and this and that. You know, everything gets done here by a volunteer, including like cutting the lawn, et cetera, et cetera. So there's many, many volunteer roles that are here. And if we align it with the person's passion, instead of the, let's say, the role that's available or the gap that's currently there, then the chances of them sticking around because it's passionate for them is way higher, right? Way higher than if we give them a job that they're not really sure they're going to love.
I imagine volunteering here is probably similar to music itself, where it becomes its own reward. People, they get involved, they're part of a group, they get to do things that they enjoy with the group, and they get to have an effect on the broader community as well.
Yeah, you're bang on there. It also helps, like, we provide identity, right? Because you're part of the team. We talk about it as a team. It's a real team effort, and that's a really fun thing to say. Like, we'll even give you a business card if you want. Oh, I'm a volunteer and I get a business card? Yes, you do, you know? Because you're part of the team here at Amherst Island Radio, and sure, there are some volunteers that have a, you know, work more hours a week, so to speak, than other volunteers. None of that matters. None of that matters. If everyone's hands on the same rope and it's being pulled in the same direction, that's all that matters.
Yeah, I feel there's more fuel and passion than there is in pay.
Yeah, indeed. Know? Indeed. Yeah.
One of the things that struck me, I tune in quite a bit, and one of the things that struck me is the engagement the listening audience has the opportunity to. I feel like when someone's broadcasting on a show, they're inviting conversation. You know, they're on Facebook on the chat, and they, you know, there's other ways to communicate and things like that. And I feel like you know, when I listen to commercial radio, for example, I don't get the sense that someone's sitting there in a booth spinning music waiting for me to call into the station with a request or anything like that. But that's the exact opposite of what I feel is happening here. Is that right?
Yeah, it's exactly right. And I think that comes down to, again, the volunteer nature, right? Often, it's a bit of a solitary experience because you might be the person on the microphone and I don't know, it might be Wednesday at 5 o'clock and like you're the only person in the station right now, okay? And we're humans and I think humans work better with some kind of engagement and interaction. So it becomes a little less performative, let's say, on the microphone if, oh, you just got a text from so-and-so that wants to hear, I don't know, some crazy AC/DC song that you don't even know the title of. Well, you go to our music library of 250,000 songs, you find it, hopefully. If you don't, you play something close to it. And it's really fun to be able to say, hey, Joe Smith from Napanee just called in and said he wants this or texted us live in studio or stuff like that. So yeah, it is very engaging. We tell people that. We say, be as engaging as you want. Don't be shy, right? Because let's face it, a lot of folks, sure, are still listening to the radio on their cars. There's a lot of car penetration, but I think when you're home, there's a lot less radio penetration, but on social media or things like text messaging, that can be done on mobile devices. So we get some engagement by leveraging more of the newer media as well.
Yeah, I feel, you know, we live in a digital age and at a time when radio as a medium seems to be declining, there's so many other sources you get news or music or what have you from. But Amherst Island Radio seems paradoxically to be expanding its relevance. Maybe it comes down to community. You know, you can build a radio station for an audience with an audience in mind, because that's how marketers think, and I'm a marketer. Anyway, but I feel like when you build one with community, or maybe when the community builds the station instead, it's, you know.
I like what you just said there, when the community builds a station, because that's really what this is. It wasn't just a bunch of rich people that just decided, hey, we're going to try to do this. No, it was the community that decided. Mm-hmm. Money was almost a secondary situation, yeah. Right? And you just try to do good in the community. Along those lines, we ask our volunteers that when you're out in the community, like, represent the station. Whether you're going to go, like we were at Lion Spike Music Festival in South Frontenac, like we had tons of people on the ground doing things, talking about the radio station, just hyping people up, telling people how great it is to have local music festivals. You know, I was asked this year, very honored, I was the MC for Napanee Battle of the Bands, 2-day event where I got to stand up there and do things. Like, I'm not trained for these things, but it's fun to be in the community and say, yeah, I'm Eric Tremblay, I'm with Island Radio 101.3 FM, and it just gives a face to a name and a human touch to everything like this. And I think that's one of the things that media can really improve on. A lot of media is through a device, whether it's a radio, a television, a mobile device. But I think that one of the wins is the media should be face-to-face in the community it's serving. So we tell all our volunteers, and this is where we have a lot of power in that sense, because we have 60 volunteers. They amplify the face-to-face impact that this group makes in the community. And then that's how you get new listeners. Because people are like, oh, I never heard of this radio station, but my neighbor George does a show there. Oh, really? When? I listen in. Boom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. There always seems like there's something brewing at Amherst Island Radio. There's nonstop ideas. We get the emails, we read them. You've always got your sights set on another milestone, and I know with next year being your 20th anniversary, what are the next big milestones? What's cooking?
Yeah, the next big milestone would be in the very room that we're doing right here. It's getting it all video enabled is going to be the thing, because we want to be able to do, let's say, live to YouTube gigs at the same time as we're live to FM, and then have proper video producer who has 5 or 6 cameras that they just switch through, and live production for the music and things like that. So that's one of the things that we're citing for this building. And because we built this building from scratch, we've got it all pre-wired. Just a matter of designing the system and getting it going. So I would think that's the first thing that we're going to be working on, you know, as the festival season sort of wanes a little bit, because we do push out a lot of energy into the world going out and onto all these face-to-face events and stuff like that. But then in the winter, there's fewer of those, more time to really work on the technical aspects. So I would say that's probably the thing that's the most top of mind. But then, as I mentioned earlier, it's this idea that, okay, we do need to find a new home for the world headquarters on Amherst Island. Mm-hmm. So that is brewing in the background for us as we network with other organizations on the island to find the best place to stabilize that location for another 20 years.
And what about yourself personally? You've left a career to, you know, for a station manager position at a community radio station. And not that that's a bad thing. Your passion is evident, but is there some kind of legacy or end game in mind for you? What's your greatest hope?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, yeah, you've talked about the fact that I've left a career. And yeah, for those that don't know, I worked for a long time in academia, like 32 years. And I just, quote unquote, retired. But I'm only 56 years old. So like, you know, I'm not ready to die on the couch, so to speak, right?
You look and sound much younger.
Yeah, well, there you go. Thank you. But this has always been the plan. I'm always a person that's thinking 5 years ahead. I'm just visualizing 5 years ahead all the time. And 5 years ago, when I looked at this place, it was like, oh, yeah, this is where I want to be. Before I'm 75 years old, I need to invest a lot of time in this community endeavor because I just love it. I get huge, huge adrenaline from seeing someone who's afraid to touch the faders on the board to a year later, them asking guests in here, them doing live phoners, them doing Zoom calls into the studio. I just get a huge kick out of that, right? And so, you know what? Life is short. You might as well do what you love. So I decided, yeah, I'm going to leave this six-figure salary. I'm going to get rid of it. A lot of my friends at work were like, you are crazy. But I put away the six-figure salary, and I just decided I'm going to sizzle on a shoestring and just have fun.
Well, it makes sense when you think about it. And it does speak to the power of, like, we talk about community and we talk about volunteers. 60 volunteers, that's a lot of volunteers.
Oh yeah.
And the fact that, as you say, you seem to be happy leaving this career in academia, and the keys to happiness, we all know money can't buy happiness. It can buy you a certain amount of comfort and stability, and that's great, but the keys to happiness are ultimately service and connection, and you've created both here, and it's nice to see that you're looking forward to moving forward in a deeper sense with that.
Yeah, I really like what you said there, you know, and gratitude is also a word I like to use too. You know, being thankful for the things around you and being happy with what you've got. It's great to think about what's going to happen in 5 years. You need to do that. But on your day-to-day, you need to love what you've got right now. You know, you need to love being with your friends, hanging out, doing cool things, whether it's in the community or in the studio or going to live gigs, seeing live music in and around town. All these things are super, super fun, and you got to enjoy every day. It's that old cliche. If you love what you do, then it doesn't feel like work, right? And I definitely love working here, and it doesn't feel like any kind of work.
Man, that's a great note to almost finish this conversation on. John, you got something else?
Yeah. I was going to ask, and I think you've answered this maybe indirectly. What do you think is the thing that people misunderstand about this place and what you do?
I'm not sure a lot of people misunderstand what we do here, because we tell them we're community radio stations and we do things, but they certainly don't know that there's an army of people working here, and they don't know that they can get involved by snapping their fingers. They just don't know that. They think, okay, it's very hard to do this. It's very challenging. I don't have any training. I'm not in the business, so to speak. And so I think there's a perceived barrier to entry that it really is not there. It really is not there. You know, I invite people, and this army of volunteers invites an army of anyone to come and talk to us and see how you can get involved, because we'll give you all the support that you need, right? You know, recently we had Anna and Dee from 47 Teeth start a show here. And at first, I mean, they're accomplished musicians. They've been in front of all these things. And all of a sudden, the first show, I can tell they're super nervous. I'm like, guys, I got you. Don't worry. Just enjoy it. And everything is great. And we do that with every volunteer, right? Don't worry about having any kind of pre-skill that you need here. We'll teach you everything you need to know, and there's no barrier to entry. The community is here, and we want to invite you in.
I like that the content has a real flavor to it. You know, I think there's a lot of engineering that goes into commercial broadcast radio and the programming and the on-air personalities and things like that. I'm not crapping on that. But here, when you tune in, it's, you know, you're hearing real conversations and real people with real interests and real passions. You're talking about real stuff, and it's unfiltered.
Yeah, it's totally.
And they make mistakes, and they misplace their notes, and sometimes, you know, they forget to play on the song, you know, and that's okay. Like, you embrace it all, yeah, as a volunteer-run community radio station, and that's what I love the most about it. It's just so real.
Yeah, and I've had actually people tell me that, where they like listening to the radio station because it resonates with them. Like, they can feel that they could have made that same mistake.
Yeah, yeah. I almost feel like I'm in the booth with them, you know. It's just like, oh, cool, you know, this is, yeah, it feels that intimate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some advice for our podcast listeners that may have never tuned into Amherst Island Radio Station 101.3 FM and CJAI.ca 24/7. You can tune in online. But for your Amherst Island Radio newbie who hasn't tuned in, what's a good on-ramp? Are there certain programs that, you know, if you haven't listened to us, you know, tune in this time or catch this show, and if you want a little bit of a flavor.
It's a good question because the flavors are so different. Yeah. I mean, we've got everything on here from, I mean, we said death metal. We've got people that are playing hard rock. We've got people that are playing Caribbean music, like Wayne on Thursdays. Amazing. What I like about the diversity is, you know, sometimes there's songs you never heard of. And I actually like that. You know, I like the fact that, I've never heard that song before, or this is the first time that this kind of genre I'm listening to. So if people want to get involved here and just to listen in, pick any time. Like, you can't go wrong kind of thing. And you'll hear Kingston Live on this radio station, right? You'll hear all kinds of strange things. And I will say, though, the person will stay nameless, but one time I was talking to a potential client and I said, hey, you're going to love it. We've got a community. And I gave him the whole spiel. He goes, this sounds great. I think it's really, really great. And I'm interested. And then about 3 hours later, I got a email saying, oh, I'm never advertising on your radio station. I tuned in and someone was speaking French and no one's going to listen to that garbage. And I thought, okay, well, that's not the kind of business that we want on this radio station.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because you're going to hear a lot of crazy things here. And if what you want is the antithesis of commercial radio, then this is what you're getting.
And like you said, you can hear Kingston Live podcast replay here Tuesdays at 10 p.m. and Fridays at 10 a.m.
Yes.
As well. We certainly appreciate the support that Amherst Island Radio has given us as we've gotten the podcast off the ground. I think you're going to be episode 82, actually.
That sounds right.
If you can believe that. So, yeah, yeah.
Can I tattoo that on there?
Yeah, we'll get a plaque installed in here. Yeah, for sure. Well, Eric, thanks so much for being our guest today.
My pleasure. Thanks, John and Rob. I really appreciate this. And Nathan behind the board.
Thank you, Nathan.
Woohoo!
This has been Kingston Live. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please share it, tell a friend, or subscribe on your platform of choice. For show listings, artist info, and all things Kingston music, check out kingstonlive.ca. Kingston Live was produced in Kingston by Soundwise. Hosted by Rob Howard and John Sanfilippo. Writing and research by Peter Sanfilippo. Executive producer Rob Howard. We'd love to hear from you. Email us at podcast@kingstonlive.ca.
Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present a new single released July 25th by local electronic artist Cacao called Light It Up. The new single features Cacao himself on vocals, surrounding the idealism of self-actualization in a grand universal sense. It's a fun, funky, and upbeat electro song guaranteed to make you move and raise your vibration. Accompanied by groovy synth work, punchy drums, and funky vocals, Cacao takes you on a journey of cosmic self-discovery and a whole lot of bass. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visitkingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Light It Up by Cacao on your favorite platforms and enjoy it here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Get excited, now we're gonna ride. Purple hope, see you, man.
Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present Adonis, a super fun, groovy, and very danceable funk pop anthem about admiring a person who seems too heavenly to be human. The subject, Adonis, possesses unshakable, authentic confidence and a striking, undeniable beauty, but yet that Adonis is also humble and fun, sweet, and down to earth. Keep up with the latest from this local funky band by following them on Instagram at NiceOnTheBand. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visitkingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Adonis by NiceOn on your favorite platforms and enjoy it here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Give me something real. Tell me how you feel.
On this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present Love in Space from local artist New Clarion, who released their sophomore EP Phonetic earlier this year. The new single explores the idea of finding love where you least expect it. Sonically, it occupies a more rhythmic R&B flair in the modest New Clarion catalog, but features the signature stacked vocals and atmospheric textures that listeners have heard through previous releases. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Love and Space by New Clarion on your favorite platforms and enjoy it now with us here on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Spelled out with a foregone conclusion.